Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Riverfront. This is episode 425 of the world's like 17th least dangerous podcast. I am Nate Dotson. I am here with the Podfather, Bill Lack. How are you, Bill?
Doing great. Doing great. Up almost past my bedtime. You know, the sacrifices I make for our, you know, for our people here.
I'm telling you, it's an important role you play. As you may have noticed, Chad is not with us. He will be shortly. He is, who knows what he's doing. We can't keep track of that guy.
He's actually doing, you know, what he's paid to do rather than the stuff that he likes to do, you know.
If only you could get paid to do both.
Yeah, boy, wouldn't that be sweet?
All right, if you figure out how, just let me know. Well, we had some baseball played since the last time we joined here. We had a four-game set in Pittsburgh that the Reds and Pirates split. Today ended a two-game set in Cleveland against the Guardians with a rain delay sandwich in the middle there. And the Reds took both of those. I love it when a sweep works out for the good guys. Obviously, we're going to get into the Hunter Green stuff, Bill. Was there anything else that jumps to mind thinking about that Pittsburgh series?
The Pittsburgh series, no. The Reds offensively were kind of disappointing in the series. I struggle to call a two game series a sweep. You know, I think that, and they were making a big deal of it. If you were watching on the broadcast today, that this is the first time the Reds have ever swept the Indians in Cleveland. I'm like, it was a two game series, guys. Let's not get too excited here. You know.
There should be different barometers for different teams. Like, we are allowed to have two-game sweeps and two-game winning streaks.
But if you're the Dodgers, it's got to be like at least four games.
That's right. Well, let's jump right into, it was probably the biggest talking point of the last week or so, the Hunter Green game. Hunter Green, I don't have his stats pulled up here in front of me, but he was electric. I think he went 7 2/3. Or 7 1/3 of no hit ball.
7 1/3, I believe, yeah.
7 1/3, that's right. No hit ball. But the big question was, did David Bell do the right thing, pulling him after 118 pitches? And was it too soon? Was it right on time? What do you think, Bill?
I think if anything, he may have left him in there a little too long. He was. If you watched in the eighth inning, he was laboring, and you could see he didn't have the same rhythm he had earlier. Chad and I were texting back and forth during the game, and his stuff was electric. I mean, it was, and I've said all along since I've gotten to see Green this year that, I mean, it's great that he can bring it up there 100 miles an hour, seemingly whenever he wants to, but that's not what's going to make him successful as a major league pitcher. It's going to be his off pitches. And He was working the bottom of the strike zone with breaking stuff in that game on Sunday, and it was phenomenal to watch. It didn't look like a 22-year-old kid, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can really disagree with that. And you're right, he threw the slider more often than he did the fastball. You could argue it's a much more unhittable pitch. I mean, I think that he learned early on that, you know, in the minors, people will have a hard time catching up to that triple-digit heat. But there's a lot of guys in the big league level that aren't going to have too much of a problem with that. And when they do make contact, it goes a long way. Personally, I think I don't have a problem with David Bell leaving him in the way he did. I agree that he was sort of winding down there at the end, those two back-to-back walks. You know, he had five walks on the day, but two of them were the last two batters he faced. I guess – They talked about it on the broadcast a lot. I was listening to it on the radio actually, and you know, what better option is the team going to be better off by replacing the guy on the mound? And that's one side of it. The other one is obviously 118 pitches. I mean, it's a 22-year-old. He's had his injury history that we don't like to talk too much about. I guess my question is, what's the magic number? What number of pitches is too many? I mean, he threw 100 the last time out. Is it too much at 105? Is it 110? And I certainly don't know the answer to that. It doesn't seem like anyone else does either, unless you get on Twitter for a while. You'll find plenty of answers there.
Well, that's where all the experts hang out.
Yeah. I guess my biggest issue was that they didn't have anybody warming up. I mean, I don't know if
And that seems to be one of David Bell's biggest issues to me. He did it again. I think it was with Overton the other night, or when it was when Diaz got in trouble and there was nobody up. That's what it was. I'm not a big David Bell fan or big David Bell detractor, but it does seem like there are times when you got 200 guys in the bullpen, it would seem like you would get somebody up just out of caution.
Yeah.
And I don't know. As for the when you should pull them and when you Chris Welsh talks a lot about high leverage pitches and pitching in high leverage situations and that being more wearing on you. And I readily admit that I don't know enough about pitching to be able to tell when's a high, what's a high leverage inning and what's not. I assume it's when you're late in a ball game pitching to 4, 5, 6 guys or something like that. But I don't like seeing a 22-year-old kid that's already had his arm worked on once throwing 118 pitches. And to me, there shouldn't be any discussion of whether you pulled him or not. Hell, they pulled Kershaw when he was throwing a no-hitter, And
right.
He's got a lot more, innings on his arm than Green does.
Yeah, I guess you certainly want to, side with caution. But, if he doesn't walk those two guys and gets those two guys out, then he's sitting just over 100 pitches with one inning to go. And I think it's a different story. Adrenaline's going to kick in. He's a young guy. But, as the story goes, he did walk those guys. He did get pulled. And I guess the rest is quite literally history, as the Reds became one of 6 teams to no-hit the other team and lose the ball game.
And who else but the Reds could manage to pull that off in this day and age? The other thing, though, we're talking about the pitches and all these things, and a lot of guys, a lot of people, guys my age, you'll hear them say, well, Jim Maloney used to throw 250 pitches, and, these guys used to throw, 200 pitches in a game. Or the thing is, what they don't always seem to want to talk or want to think about, though, is the amount of money that the teams have invested in these guys now. They're a much more valuable asset than they were then. Then they've got Jim Maloney. I think probably most of you probably ever made was about $50,000 in a year. And hell, that's pocket change for these. They got that in their wallet. it's a whole different situation. And I don't think it's really comparable.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And there's all kinds of other factors in there trying to compare the two eras. The guys are throwing harder now. They're probably, laboring through it a lot more. The guys they're facing are a lot better, a lot more dialed in. Mm-hmm. So, those high leverage pitches that Chris Walsh talks about, maybe that's it. But, the Reds got beat, even though they no-hit the team, the Pittsburgh Pirates. It stunk. I think that the internet loved making fun of the Reds a little bit about it for a little while. But, hey, when I look back at that day, I'm not going to remember anything other than the Reds' 22-year-old young stud throwing an absolute gem, and hopefully one of many, many more to come.
Yeah, hopefully, maybe next time they'll score a run for him.
I mean, that would have been nice. And you could argue that one reason why they didn't was because Tyler Stevenson did not play that day after the game prior, leaving the game early after taking a foul ball to the face mask. Mm-hmm. That led to a lot more conversations. People were wondering, should the Reds move Tyler Stevenson to first base to protect his longevity? I've certainly got some opinions, but what do you think?
Well, I don't think you're going to do it. I don't think there's much discussion of it now. I mean, because they got Votto for 2 more years, and they're paying Joey $25 million. That's not to say that Stevenson couldn't get some time in the outfield. He seems like a pretty athletic athletic kid. I think we're going to differ on this. I think the long-term success for this kid is not going to be behind the plate. As someone that's had a couple of concussions in his time, they say that, once you get the first one, the next ones are easier to get. That's the position you're most likely to take something, take shots to the head, foul tips, guys running into you, getting your head slammed into the ground like the douchebag from the Dodgers did to him. think if you want this kid to be successful over the long term, I think you're going to have to get him out from behind the plate. Plus the fact that this team, you know, that this we seem to have a, you know, like three good catchers coming along fairly, you know, they're, you know, coming along in the system that, that they're pretty high on. So, you know, that may push him out from behind the plate too. And a lot of it, I think, is going to have to do with timing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a completely fair argument. You know, Rich Thompson, one of our patrons over at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy, he asked something that you just touched on. It says that unless someone develops over the next 2 to 3 years to fill that Joey Votto gap, where do you see Tyler Stevenson in the future? You see him being at first base. I just think that you have to give him every opportunity you can to stick at catcher. Somebody brought up a good point that he probably would have been on the big league roster sooner if he had played a different position. They kept him down there to work on his craft, so they kept some big money from his, you know, from his bank account. I get the health things, and I think ultimately he will have some say-so in that, but the value, just talking as a fan here, the statistical value of an elite catcher offensively is so much more impactful than that of a first baseman. You know, right now he would be a slightly above league average first baseman, but he's an elite hitting catcher.
And that, I think that comes to play. And I understand what you're saying there, and I agree with it, but I don't think you can just look at it on its face. You got to look at whether whether you're the position that you're going to move him to, if that's already below it, you got to add them together and then see where you are. You know, if the guy that replaces him at catcher is better than the guy that's playing first base in terms of, you know, where they fit, then it's you're better off moving him.
Yeah, that's a good point.
A lot of it depends. And a lot of this is going to have to do with timing. There was just an article in the Enquirer. I think it was in the Enquirer the other day. I read it somewhere online where they talked about these young catchers that are coming up behind him. And there were three of them, but I think the highest one was like a high A or double A. Mm-hmm. He wasn't in Louisville. But I don't know if I agree with the argument that the Reds held him back. You know, 2 years ago, he wouldn't have been ready, I don't think. He had had some injury problems in the minor leagues. He had problems staying healthy down there. So I think they were bringing him along fairly slowly. And the Reds tend to bring guys along slowly anyway, whether we like it or not. And you got to remember, you know, 2 years ago, we had Casale and Tucker, and they were a pretty doggone good catching combination. So I don't think they treated this kid unfairly. I don't think it's anything like the situation with what they did with Senzel.
Right.
I don't think he was ready. You know, I think they brought him up last year. I think it was the right time. And he did his, you know, he far exceeded the expectations I had for him last year. And I really expected him to come into his own this year. And if we can keep him on the field, I think he'll just get better and better.
Yeah, I have a hard time disagreeing with too much of that. I guess at the end of the day, you could look at it one of two ways. Either this is a game, you leave it up to the kids, say, hey, go play this game that you love. Let us know what you're thinking. If he wants to make a move, then I'm sure he can influence that a little bit. But if you're the ball club, if you're Nick Kroll or Phil Castellini, you're Bob Castellini, you got to think, oh, this is an asset. This is an investment. How do I get the most out of this asset? And you're going to get the longest term, you know, the longest returns, I imagine, at first base. But we do have the DH now. So, you know, he doesn't have to catch 150 games. And I like what you said about they put him in a corner outfield spot. You know, keep his bat in the lineup while protecting his knees.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, I think we all said coming into this season with the DH and you know, being able to rest Joey a little bit at first or run Joey to DH, you know, for a day and put Stevenson out there. And, you know, and again, I'm showing my age here, but we've had catchers before that played in the outfield. We've laughed about this. I mean, if you look back, Johnny Bench, I remember it was a double. I think it was a double header. Johnny Bench started in center field. Can you imagine a catcher starting in center? I mean, other than the guy. But anyway.
I can't imagine anybody with Johnny Bench's build starting in center field.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, and this is a whole different thing, but you think of Johnny Bench as this big, bulky, you know, big, stocky, big guy. And compared to the guys now, he's not a big guy.
No.
You know, so.
I mean, Tyler Stevenson is a big game.
But this, something else I wanted to touch on, though, is, as you were saying, players have a lot more influence now on where they're going to play than they ever did in the past. for right or wrong, whether you like it or not. It's just a fact of life. You know, you don't get you don't get your position changed without you having at least some say in it. Now, you know, you don't want to be, you know, you don't want to be a rookie kid like Senzel, and they ask him to move. He's not going to say, no, I don't want to do that, when you're going to, you know, tar your name with the ball club for the rest of your career. But you can, in small ways, I'm sure, you know, let people know that you're not real happy about the move. But you're also, if they want you to move, is to get playing time.
You know, true.
They're not going to move you so you can sit on behind somebody. So
yeah, it's not a huge loss. They're trying to move you for reasons that, at least in their mind, are going to be beneficial to both the club and the player. But baseball's a little bit behind the other two major sports in the player empowerment era. You know, it seems like the players have a lot more leverage in basketball and football right now. So I would guess it's only a matter of time before that happens in baseball too. They catch up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there's some of it in baseball, but I can't talk about the NBA because I don't follow it very closely. But you know, in football, you don't see much position changing. You don't see much. You know, you see ways that players are used, but if that becomes a problem, generally they move teams, not move.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. Not positions. It's teams and salaries that they're seem to be making a stand on.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about Tyler Stevenson. It kind of got me thinking. I knew we were going to talk about this, and I had a question I wanted to throw out, and hopefully the chat will pop in while we're talking about this. But, you know, a lot of people wonder what the Castellanos could do to sort of reel the fan base back in. How could we get people to, you know, take the focus away from all the crap that they put us through the last month and a half? And I think that the biggest answer is that's the biggest answer.
I just held up a sign that said sell for anyone that's not watching and it's listening.
Yeah, sell the team is the one way that they get everybody on their side, unless you work for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Outside of that, laying out some sort of vision would be important, but I think locking up some of this young talent, you know, buy out these arbitration years, and at least show the fans that, hey, we are committed to, you know, our young homegrown talent. But if you're going to do that, who would you want the Reds to lock up?
I don't know. Honestly, Stevenson is the only one right now that I would be comfortable doing it with. You know, you talk about Green, you talk about Lodolo, but in the rookie years, and you know, what are you going to – you're probably talking about, what, 4 years, 5 years? And I struggle with giving pitchers 4- and 5-year deals. I just do. And I think, you know, I really think we're talking about pie in the sky anyway, because I don't think the Castellanos are going to do any of that. They're you know, they're going to want to, when these guys' salaries start topping out, they're going to want to, if you believe that they're trying to operate on the Tampa Bay model. Now, we won't even get into the argument whether they're smart enough to operate the Tampa Bay model. That's a whole different discussion. But even if you believe that, Tampa doesn't do that. They don't, you know, they may buy out some arbitration years, but they don't go, once guys start, you know, getting above where they're comfortable with salary wise, they move them. You know, the idea of the Reds getting fair market value for guys once they're major league successful, I have no confidence in Nick Kroll and his cronies being able to do that. And that's why I struggle with this whole, you know, you got to have faith in this idea.
You and me both.
I'd have faith if I believed you knew what you were doing. I mean, it just seems like and we've all said this on here before, is it just seems like his priority is whoever calls on the phone. There doesn't seem to be a plan. You know, they went into spring or into the off season and unloaded a bunch of salaries. And all you heard about was the, you know, they were comparing, you're getting their resources in line with their, you know, budget and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden when they took a bunch of hits publicity wise, then all of a sudden they went out and spent money. So it was like, well, the phone rang and they said, oh shit, we're looking bad PR wise. Let's spend a little bit of money and we'll bring these guys in on 1-year deals and whatever. And they end up spending the same amount of money and with less talent. So why should we have any faith in their ability to, you know, build this team into a Tampa Bay model, for lack of a better term?
Well, listen, I can agree with the point you just made. I just don't have to like it.
Right.
Here I was trying to have a rosy conversation about a bright future full of young studs, and you reminded me how none of that's going to happen. Thanks, Bill.
Well, I hope you're, you know, from your mouth to God's ear, you know, I want them to be, you know, and they were talking today about the Indians on the broadcast. That, you know, the Cleveland's not a real good team either, but they're playing all 23 and 24 year old guys. You know, they got about a bunch of young dudes on their team. You know, we're still starting guys that are 30, 31 or whatever, you know.
I saw somebody trying to argue that we should try to lock up Tommy Pham for the rest of his career. I'm just like, I don't have a problem with how he played this year, but I don't see how he is a part of the long-term future here in Cincinnati.
And he's fine.
He's fine.
He's a fine, you know, he's a decent player, but he's not somebody you try.
Beard. His facial hair is perfectly lined up. It's impressive.
But he's not the kind of guy you want to build your future around. He's not the kind of guy that you're going to build a team on. He's not going to carry this team. We don't have a play unless Joey comes back and is the player Joey was for periods last year, or Stevenson blooms even more than I think he will this year. I think he can become that kind of player. There isn't a guy on this team offensively that can carry him. They don't have that. They don't have anybody with that kind of talent.
I know personally, I would love to see him throw some money at Jonathan India. I'm not saying overpay him, but keep him happy. I think there was some,
you know, and he didn't even occur to me. I apologize. You're right. You see, that's the problem with having three quarters of your team on the DL.
Yeah,
you forget about guys, and you're right. India is somebody that India and Stevenson are the two that make the most sense to me.
Have you seen the clips of Jonathan India on the bench just cheering on the team from the dugout?
No,
he just seems like he's everybody on that team's best friend. Specifically Kyle Farmer. The Reds are making plays, people are getting hits, and you just look back there, and Jonathan India is like leaning over the rails, pumping his fist, tossing his hair around. It is so much fun to watch. And, yeah, I think I was a little concerned about a sophomore slump. Now, we don't know if he's going to have one or not because he hasn't played that much. And be careful with him. But a guy like that with that kind of energy, and I think especially as close as he was to Nick Castellanos, you got to imagine that they talk a lot. I would say do whatever you can to get him back on in your good graces.
I would not mind buying out his arbitration years, which would be, I get what, like a 4-year deal, probably. I'm thinking off the top of my head. I have no problem with that for reasonable money. 4-year, I don't know, $22, $23 million deal, something like that. But like you said, I wouldn't overpay him because he's also not a guy. He's not going to carry you. He's a good player. I think he'll make an all-star team or two. Oh, let's see that tie. I want to see that tie. Let's see that tie.
I'm here, gang.
Chad has just joined the chat. Chad Dawson has joined the chat. Just in time for us to talk about – Bill and I were getting ready to finish a 10-minute dialogue on how much we want to lock up Kyle Farmer to a 10-year, $200 million deal. Keep him in red for life.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, come on.
The conversation was, which of the young guys would you like to see the Reds try to start locking up at least some semblance of long term?
Well, it depends on, I guess, what we can you guys hear me okay?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. And now the chat's back. I do want to apologize. I had my phone hooked, my computer hooked up to my AirPods, but for the first like 7 minutes, my AirPods weren't in. They were just sitting on the table. So if the audio was weird at the beginning, apologies. I'm not used to this.
Well, that's okay. The problem, thing is, I'm so loud he could hear me from his iPod earbud sitting on the table.
Well, I tell you what, I'm late one time, and you guys just about burned the place down to the ground.
The inmates are running in asylum.
You know what Buffett said? Jimmy Buffett said, "Gypsies in the palace, brother. Gypsies in the palace."
That's right. So, yeah, again, I don't know what all you all said before. Sorry I'm late. Glad to be here. I mean, that list starts with Tyler Stevenson, obviously, right? Young guys you want to lock up. He and Jonathan India. You know, the question is, number one, do you still consider Tyler Mallee a young guy that you want to talk about locking up? Mm-hmm. And the other question is, when do you start talking about Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo? Now, Lodolo has not quite shown us enough yet. And really, Hunter Green, if you look at his overall numbers, hasn't necessarily shown us enough yet. But if you can get some kind of value, do you do it? I don't know what the answer is. On those pitchers especially, you know, you get burned on pitchers sometimes. But then again, I've never seen a talent in Cincinnati like Hunter Green. So, you know, maybe does that outweigh the danger of wrapping up a pitching prospect too early? Probably not. But give me Stevenson and India for the next 10 years, please.
I want to go ahead and lock up Matt McClain and Ellie De La Cruz while we're at it.
Might as well.
I wouldn't do a 10-year deal with anybody. I wouldn't do a 10-year deal with anybody.
Not even with Joey Votto? I would do a 10-year deal with Joey Votto starting today for the next 10 years.
Well, let's say it out loud. Joey Votto, we offer you a 10-year deal to be a host on the Riverfront podcast.
And Chad will match the money you're making now.
Well, I'll match the money that Nate gets out of this thing.
Let me ask, you mentioned reasonable. We were jokingly talking about Kyle Farmer as you came on, Chad. Let me ask you guys a question, though. When Barrero is healthy, does he come in and get the shortstop job as bad as Farmer's played?
I would have said no preseason. There was no chance that was going to happen. I still am not quite sure because I don't know if it's just that there's this inordinate love of Kyle Farmer. I don't know if that's what it is, or it's just he's been the best they've had up until now.
Despite his, what was it, 0 for 39? Something right. Like that. He went like 0 for 39 or something.
Well, but now at the point where he finally has turned back into, I don't know, he's always been, he was, you know, his OPS plus was what, 17 percentage points below average last year. He was not a good hitter last year. His defense was adequate last year. This year, when it's become clear to everyone that he can't handle the truth, as they say, there's no one else to put there right now. So he picked the right time to fall off the edge, because if he has two hot weeks before Barrero gets back, then who knows what happens. But
his OPS plus right now is 62.
Well, and the defense has fallen off. His defense has been awful.
Their infield is the worst major league infield I have ever seen.
That's surprising. You look at the record of the team, you'd think they would be better. But no. So anyway, I would hope that Barrero, given the current state of things, where the Reds are not competing for championships this year, what's the downside to giving Barrero a shot and not playing your 42-year-old, you know, backup catcher? I don't know. So anyway, that's my ramble about
it. Why are we playing the third base?
Yeah.
You know, I want to pivot slightly, and I brought this up once in the past and got kind of shot down pretty quick. I want to readdress it. Do we ever talk about trying to keep Tyler Naquin around a little bit longer? I mean, the guy's got – his OPS is up to 802 right now. Every season that he's played that he was healthy, he's had an OPS at or really, really close to 100. He's not that old. I don't know. I like the guy. I'm a Tyler Naquin fan.
No, I think that's reasonable, and I'll let Bill, you can jump here too, but I think the thing is he's limited. What he does pretty well. You know, he hits right-handers pretty well, and he's not going to kill you on defense. And so there's value in that, and yes, I think you have to platoon him. You have to watch where you play him, but if you play him in the spots where he is particularly capable of excelling, if you hide his weaknesses, which you can do some, he can help a team. He's just kind of a glorified third, fourth outfielder. But he's absolutely useful, and I love the guy too. I've really enjoyed watching him be a Red for the last couple of years.
Most outstanding player in the Ohio Cup.
Oh, wow. What a time to be alive.
But to me, a lot of it would have to do with the cost. I mean, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of money on a guy that's going to, like, get a chance at my third or fourth outfielder.
But how much is it going to cost? I don't know that he'll cost that much.
And like I said, if it's something that can be justified, I got no problem. I think he's a valuable guy. I mean, it kind of like, you know, like we said all along about Kyle Farmer. He's a valuable guy to have on your team. He just shouldn't be starting every day in the six hole, you know, playing out there playing shortstop. I like Naquin. I just wish he wasn't our best outfielder.
Right, right.
That's pretty fair.
Well, I'll say this. In terms of if he doesn't cost much, I'm done worrying about the Castellanos checkbook. So I don't care what he costs. Pay him what he's worth. You know, if you want him on your team, pay him what he's worth. Whatever that is, I don't know what that is.
Well, the other thing is, and I understand what you're saying there, and it makes sense from a fan's perspective. But if they're only going to give you X amount to spend, do you want to spend a higher percentage on that than it's worth on a Tyler Naquin? You know, we can say, well, you know, just spend the money, but that's like, you know, saying standing in the front yard and waving and hoping it rains. You know, it's either going to happen or it's not, and we know that they're going to spend X amount of dollars, and they basically tell you we're not going to spend any more than that. So if you overspend on Naquin, then that's part of the money you can't give to Stevenson.
Okay, but you're absolutely correct, and I'm not arguing with you. But what we're doing is just accepting the premise of that Bob Castellini is trying to sell us that we only have a certain amount of money to spend. You have to pay players if you want good players. You got to pay players, and I'm not saying to pay him above his market rate, but you pay him what he's worth if he brings value to the team. You have to put together a 26-man roster somehow, and you need 26 players.
I agree with everything you're saying, but I disagree with where you're saying accepting that. I don't like it, but I know that's what's going to happen. And to not accept that there's going to be a limit because of that is to just, you know, rail it at the elements. It's inconceivable that it's going to mean anything.
And, hey, Nate, do you like how Bill, I want to get Nate's input here. Do you like how Bill and I just said, we agree with everything each other's saying, but completely disagree with each other.
We've only been doing this for 25 years.
I know, right? What do you think, Nate? Anything else, or you want to move on to another topic?
I say I'm going to do both. You take all that money that we're talking about and you give it to our next guy that we need to discuss, Connor Overton, staff ace, Reds legend, Richmond, Virginia native, Connor Overton.
With his 1.3 wins above replacement this year, and his career wins above replacement going into this year was 1.4.
Yeah, it's something you don't see very often. But he's been good.
He's been legitimately good.
Not smoke and mirrors good, right, Nate? He's been legitimately good.
Yeah, I took some time. I went to just try to figure out what had happened. And, you know, the ground ball rate is up to 44% on the year, ground ball percentage, which is far better than he's ever done. He was pretty much bad his entire professional career until 2021. 2017, he went and pitched for an indie independent league. Apparently, added four more pitches to his repertoire, so he's now
working with six pitches.
Yeah. And I don't know if you watched him the other night. Like, he was throwing just junk. It was that classic just junk ball stuff. Kept him off balance the whole time. But when he was in the Toronto organization in 2021, made the AAA and looked pretty good. And then he obviously went and played for the Pirates. But he was never really good until that 2021 season. And then he was really, really good. Actually has the major league record for most career innings without an earned run, 13.2, to start his career. And then if you take out the last two starts of last season, one against the Reds, the other against the Phillies, he's just been awesome ever since AAA in 2021 with the Blue Jays. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me. But apparently the more pitches you have, the better.
Well, you know, we will go broke betting on someone's small sample size success, but I'll say this: he's 28, which is old, but it's not that old. You know, it's old to be a prospect, but it's not that old to figure it out. And again, maybe it's just wanting to do this thing we always do: we put on our rose-colored glasses and try to see the best. But he's looked legitimately good. I mean, it doesn't look like smoke and mirrors. I mean, he's really looked good since he came to Cincinnati, I'm not going to bet the ranch on him, but I'm enjoying it right now, and I hope it continues.
Yeah, I love how he competes out there. Did you see whenever David Bell went to take him out of the game? He was furious. He didn't want to do it. He was saying some choice words to anybody that would listen to himself, pacing up and down the dugout.
If you had that bullpen coming in to relieve you, wouldn't you be pissed?
That's a good point. There goes my victory.
Do you think it means anything that three out of the four games he started been on the road? Now, one of them was in Colorado, but do you think that has any effect?
Yeah, I think it's still all washes, you know, comes out in the small sample size.
Small
wash
sample size, yeah.
To me, I don't know. I don't. We should draw too many conclusions other than it's been really fun, and I hope it continues because he does seem like a bulldog and the type of guy Cincinnati fans could like, kind of an underdog bulldog. And I did not realize Old Dominion University and from Richmond, huh? How about that? We should go try to find his parents and watch a game with him.
He is officially a friend of the podcast.
There you go. Maybe if it pitches against the Nationals, we'll go up there and with his parents and hang out.
There he is.
I hate to trot over ground you all have already traversed, but I imagine you all began this show talking about Hunter Green.
Who?
No? You haven't talked about Hunter Green yet?
Who is he?
Yeah, we might have touched on it, but please go ahead. Let us know your thoughts because there was a lot going on.
I did say that you and I were texting during the game on Sunday.
Yeah. And that's actually the first time in years, I think, that Bill texted me during a game and he wasn't upset about some decision or something that happened. He was like, oh, man, this guy's good.
I think the first thing I said was Green's throwing a gem or something like that. And it was in like the fourth inning.
Right. And that was an understatement. It's ironic, I guess, that Bill's on this time because it comes in this thing we always repeat when we get together and the topic of a young pitcher comes up. We've literally been saying it's probably since 2007 on this when we first started this show, which is that this is just the way it is with good young pitchers. They're going to look great one day. They're going to struggle another day. They're trying to figure it out. And the guys that are batting against them drive Mercedes too. So, you know, as they say. And it's fun to watch his development in some ways, but again, that what we saw in his first couple starts and then what we saw in this most recent almost no hitter. Well, I guess it was a no hitter, but
unofficial
no hitter. We saw you start to see what the ceiling is. This is a kid that really doesn't know what he's doing yet, but he's learning how to mix in those sliders. Still got the elite velocity. I'm telling you, you know, what's his ERA now? 5.9 something or something like that. I haven't looked. I meant to look. It came down quite a bit, but so you look at his overall numbers and they do not look good.
6.21.
There you go. See, somebody doesn't pay attention to the Reds and just looks at those without having watched him pitch would say, "Wow, gosh, this kid, he needs to go to AAA." No, we're seeing the upper reaches of what he's going to be able to do. And I'm telling you, this guy has, I'm not telling you he's going to be this guy, but he has Justin Verlander ceiling, that type of stuff. Yeah. I mean, he's the reason to watch the Reds these days. He's appointment viewing.
I said to Nate, you know, that it's great that he can hit 100 whenever he seems to want to. I said, but the difference was Sunday is the off-speed stuff that he was throwing for strikes in the bottom of the strike zone. And when he early, you know, through the first six innings, when he seemed to be able to throw that pitch whenever he wanted it, they were at his mercy. I mean, there wasn't even anybody even coming close to hitting this kid.
If he gets the changeup figured out, watch out.
Oh yeah. If he can get a third pitch that he can throw for strikes, you know, almost whenever he wants to. There'll be guys that'll be wanting to take a day off when they see his name in on the lineup card.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The Ephus pitch. He's got a kid another three or four pitches if he wants to be like Connor Overton. No, but that's what I'm saying. He's 22. He has so much room to grow. It's just we've talked for years on this show about how the Reds stink. But at least we get to enjoy Joey Votto every day. That's been the saving grace for some of these awful Reds teams. Mm-hmm. And this awful Reds team, we still have Joey Votto hopefully very soon. But every 5 days, getting to watch Hunter Green, whether he gives up four home runs and is awful or he has pitches a no-hitter, just watching his development is it's one of the few reasons. There are some reasons to continue watching this team, and he's certainly right at the top. There we go. So, Nate, you're trying to say that this team is going to compete for championships this year?
Only 8.5 games out of the wild card. Bigger deficits have been made up in less time.
If you say so.
Give me something.
If you say so. What's our next topic, Nate?
Well, the internet was, I had tons of opinions on the no-hitter and David Bell's managing performance there. But the internet got riled up about something else over the last several days, Chad. What could that have been?
Oh, man, this was fun. This was fun. The piece we talked about with Jason Linden last week about calling Joey Votto the greatest player in Reds history. It was in the print magazine. It finally went live this week on the internet. They put it up on their website at CincinnatiMagazine.com. Go read it. It got plenty of engagement. It had more social media buzz than any Cincinnati Magazine column piece in a long time on their website. I mean, it really was, and 90% of it was people saying that I'm insane, or saying that that's an interesting take. You're wrong, but that's an interesting take. And maybe 10% agreeing with me. And my online column this week basically was just talk about the genesis of that piece. We were going to write a piece about Votto for the opening day issue. And it was my editor's fault. I wasn't going to say he was the best player. I was going to talk about his place in Reds history among, Bench and Morgan and everyone. And he was like, no, why don't you take this hot take? Try to make the case he's the best ever. So I tried to make the case, and I don't know if I got there or not. I think it's arguable. Truthfully, I don't believe he's the greatest player in Reds history. I think that's Joe Morgan. But Joey Votto, you can make a legitimate argument, is the best player in Reds history. Well, man, the number of Tony Perez fans, and I love Tony Perez, but the number of Tony Perez fans that came out of the woodwork, fewer Pete Rose fans than I expected in terms of the best player, but some. But anyway, boy, my mentions were a disaster zone for a couple of days, and I was actually trolling a little bit and feeding into it. It was fun. That's the only time Twitter's fun. So you all saw the piece. What did you think?
I actually have not read it yet. I have to admit, I have not read it yet. Just saying, Chad, I'm sorry, but you are not my life. You are not
my number one fan.
I did reply on Twitter to the thing about Tony Perez, though, because I did say, I watched Tony Perez for a vast majority of his career, and he ain't no Joey Votto. Great player. And you and I have talked about this. I don't even really believe Tony Perez is a Hall of Famer.
Borderline,
but I think you can make the argument either way. And I was a big Tony Perez fan. And when I was a kid and we were going down to the Big Red Machine days, Tony loved when we were in the ballpark. When me and my buddies used to go down there, he used to kill the ball. I mean, he always seemed like he hit a home run when we were in the ballpark. We used to joke that he should have paid our way in. I tend to agree with you that Morgan is probably the best Reds player of all time. But I think if you could pick out five, and I think we most of us would have the same five, Frank Robinson, Pete, Johnny, Joe, somebody else,
Kyle Farmer.
No, Buck Farmer.
Buck Farmer, the immortal.
My favorite points were the ones that were the folks that were trying to claim that Joey Votto wouldn't even have made the roster for the Big Red Machine.
Yeah. One guy said he would be the 24th guy on the roster.
It was like their arguments were directly proportional.
He'd been behind Andy Costco.
The number of misspelled words in their tweet. Yeah. Can tell you how strong their argument was. I think Joe Morgan is the best player to ever wear a Reds uniform. But I don't know that he was, in my opinion, the best Red, just from a longevity standpoint. Well,
and Jason talked last week about, that Joey's going to probably play his whole career here. And to him, that set a different standard. I don't see it that way. You're here however long you're here. As long as you're here for what I consider a reasonable amount of time, and I think a minimum to me that is 4 or 5 years, I think that's a sizable portion, enough of your career for you to be considered, the best of for the franchise. But I understand what Jason was talking about too, that to him, the fact that Joey plays here his whole career sets him in a different class.
Well, if Joey plays for 10 more years at 40 home runs a year, then I think we'll give it to him.
One way I thought about framing my argument in terms of Joey Votto is the greatest Red ever was, I think, the headline. and I didn't pick the headline, and I didn't even really want to write the article that way, but I'm glad I did. It was fun. But one way I thought about framing it was making a distinction between the best player who ever played for the Reds versus the greatest Red ever. Yeah. And the distinction being Joey Votto. They weren't the greatest.
We just lost we lost your brother there, Nate. He's frozen.
Still, the still photo is very handsome.
Yeah, for a while there, I could look right up his nose.
Chad, we lost you there.
Taylor, are you back? Yeah. Yeah, I think you're back. Go do the same. Do the same. You know, thing you just did, because we lost about the last 30 seconds of you. I think we lost him again.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure if it's going to pick up on the audio or not, but I think Chad was making the point that you know just the argument between best player versus best Red.
I want to hear what the difference is because I'm not sure that I understand what the difference between being the best player and the best Red. But
I would guess it just has to be longevity.
Maybe. I think Chad's going to have to step out and come back in, and he's frozen. Chad also
changed his name on the screen to Nate is Silly, so I think internet God's punishing him.
Are you back, Chad? Can you?
Have y'all just spent this whole time talking about whether I'm back?
Well, no. See, here. All right.
All right. Sorry.
That's all right.
One last thing I wanted to say about the Joey Votto, Tony Perez discussion is, you know, there were some people saying that there's two things actually points I want to make, saying that literally one guy said Joey couldn't have been the 24th guy on the Reds Big Red Machine roster. The first thing I want to say is, when that discussion was happening, I thought of something, a famous Sparky Anderson quote talking about Thurman Munson, I think. And he was always like, you know, basically he's a good player, but let's not embarrass him by comparing him to John Bench, you know. And I saw something about Tony Perez. Look, he was a really great player, but, you know, come on, let's not compare him to Joey Votto. He's not the type of player Joey Votto is. And I can't believe we're actually saying that because Tony Perez was amazing. I mean, he was really a great player. The other thing is this, an interesting thought experiment that we don't have to get into tonight, but that I think is a pretty interesting question. What if Joey Votto were the first baseman on the Big Red Machine? Where does he bat in that lineup? Now, many of the people that were responding to me would say that he couldn't even make it into the lineup. I think he bats third. 2010 Joey Votto bats third on the Big Red Machine.
Yeah, maybe.
We don't have to go into that tonight.
It's such a different game that it's hard to, you know, take player A and stick him in, you know, era B.
Right, but the fact that you can make an argument that he would be hitting in the heart of the order for the Big Red Machine is an argument.
If you go by numbers, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, we have a Patreon-only episode coming up soon where we are going to make up a lineup for the Big Red Machine.
There we go. We'll do
that. The Big Red Machine, like the greatest Reds of all time lineup.
There we go. Coming up soon. All right, what are we going next, Nate? You're leading the ship here right now.
Sorry, I'm trying to text with Chris Garber. You got it?
I got it.
All right,
yeah.
So next up, the Reds made some moves over the last few days. I guess we do need to touch on those as we are wont to do. They moved Vladimir Gutierrez to the bullpen. I think that we're all pretty okay with that. Does anybody? I mean, I'm not pumped about it, of course. I thought that you know, after his showing last year, he might be a 4 or 5 guy. Chad?
Yeah, just point of order here. You said they moved him to the bullpen. Is that the new name of the Louisville Bats? Did they move him to AAA is what I'm asking. No? Just the bullpen? No.
We haven't seen him since they sent him out there, but, you know.
I was trying to make a dumb joke about maybe they should have sent him to AAA instead of the bullpen. Sorry. It's been a long day.
I like Gutierrez, yes. and I think he can be a 4 or 5 guy. But the way he was struggling, I can sure understand why you're going to give somebody else a chance. I mean –
I think he can be a pretty good reliever, actually. If you limit him, you know, he only throws 2 pitches and limit him to an inning or two. I think his stuff is electric enough. If he's max velocity, max effort, and limited it just to his top 2 pitches, and gets the ball over the plate. But I'm like you. I think he could be a 5-star, 4-starter at his best. Still,
yeah, his stuff solid force last year. Hopefully, he'll go get his confidence back, work all that out. You know, they also called up Ross Detweiler, left-hander, designated Robert Duggar for assignment, which I imagine MLBTradeRumors.com never envisioned typing Robert Duggar as often as they have over the past week or two.
How many guys that have already been on the Reds major league roster this year, when you see their name on Baseball Reference, do you go, who? There's at least five or six already that I have no memory of.
It's my favorite conversation we have, our like recurring conversation on this show, is that obscure former Reds conversation.
It's the third week in May and we're doing that.
10 guys on the roster that we know 5 years from now we'll look back on this and never. Wait, who's that?
Oh my goodness, we got a full roster tonight.
Boom.
Unlike the Reds, we are not injured.
Chris, you're a little underdressed for this episode.
I didn't realize I was supposed to wear a tie.
That's what happens when you run in from work immediately and jump on a podcast. So Chris Garber is with us. Chris, welcome.
Thank you.
Chris, do you have any big thoughts on the Reds calling up Ross Detweiler?
Ooh, the Detweiler era resumes.
Is he back up or is he up?
I don't know. He feels like a guy they had in 1997, so I'm not sure.
Well, that's what we were just talking about, Chris. How many guys already in the third week in May have been on this roster that you have no memory of?
None.
He sounds like a guy I shared a beer with at a bar down the street.
Yeah.
There's plenty of Ross Detweilers down there. I've been to that bar, yeah.
What's the guy who's the guy who's doing so well? Ohlendorf?
Yeah. Connor Ohlendorf? Yeah, I think so.
No, that's Paul Orndorff. He's a wrestler.
Mr. Wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Easy mistake. Nick Senzel is also down in Louisville for a little rehab assignment.
I remember him.
Joey just finished his in Dayton tonight, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Joey's going to be up in Toronto. Any word on how long Senzel's going to be down there? Is it going to be one game, two games? They have an idea.
100 years.
Yeah.
It's on brand.
He's going to be down there for about 100 games.
How's he doing?
Next five seasons.
He's the number one prospect on the Reds, so is he doing pretty well this year?
He is, yeah. The question, here's what I want to know. Will he break the Cincinnati Reds franchise record for most rehab assignments ever?
Ooh.
He might. I don't know.
He might.
My question is somebody really keeping track of that?
I'm sure it's one of the beat writers. They're probably keeping track of that.
You think he's got 50 career hits?
Yes, he has 50. I'm going to look it up right now. So you
147 career major league hits.
Oh, there you go. See,
16 years as a Cincinnati Red.
Well, that's more than Reaver San Martin. I won't listen to this slander.
I would have taken the under on whatever you set that line.
I really would have too. I would have guessed like 65 hits.
Well, guys, we are 53 minutes into this, and we have yet to touch on the biggest news of the week, and that is my man, Graham Ashcraft, and some guy named Taylor Motter. I don't understand.
It's Tyler Malley, I think.
Real human being. Are on the taxi squad, which is not the name of the AAA team, but it might as well be.
Yeah, it's between the AAA and Major League Reds, quadruple A officially. That's your guy, Graham Ashcraft. We're going to get to see him. Is he going to get off the taxi squad?
God, I hope so. Have y'all been seeing what he's doing? He's got a 1.65 ERA and I think seven starts. No home runs allowed. One extra base hit all season. It was a double.
My question is, what is the point of putting him on the taxi squad? He's a starter. Why? Why would you bring him up and have him sitting up here when he could be pitching in Louisville?
Well, what I like about the taxi squad is that you don't have to bring someone up and put him on the roster, and they can interchange those guys in and out. So have him up here for a few days if you think he might need that extra arm, and then if not, you get him back down and get him back on his regular turn. Same with the position players. You don't want them sitting on the taxi squad for 6 weeks because they need to play.
Right.
But you can bring them up for a week, and that's not going to kill them.
Saying if he's a starter, there's no sign right now that the Reds are going to need a starter. And I don't see them bringing this guy as well as he's been pitching in the rotation down in Louisville, using him as a reliever up here.
Well, that's fair. But they only have, they need relievers. They don't have any in the major leagues.
Up until like a week and a half.
There's 100 guys in that bullpen.
They have 16 relief pitchers on the roster.
I'll put that on a tee for someone. I'm glad you all took the bait.
Oh, my God. Have you guys already spent 20 minutes on this?
On the bullpen? No.
I just don't understand. They get 14 relief pitchers.
I enjoy listening to Chris.
Yeah,
about the pitching staff. I want to hear this rant right now.
It's a new topic for me. They get 16 relief pitchers, and yet somehow, like on a Tuesday after an off day, David Bell's like, I can't warm anybody up. I'm out. I'm already out of relief pitchers. We're going to go with who we've got, and if he somehow doesn't blow the game, then Jason LaRue is pitching for the Reds after that. It just don't understand the rules anymore of this game.
I don't think David Bell does either.
Maybe that's the problem.
David Bell would be fired in any normal year, right? Like, it's just like they're like, well, who cares? So it's all
I'm not going to pay him and somebody else.
Yeah. And if we fire him, are the Reds going to improve to 14 games under 500?
Right. I mean, they're terrible no matter what. I'm not even saying he should be fired. I'm just saying, like, on a team that cared, they would fire their manager when they're like 2-63.
What would it be like to do a show every week about a team that cared? Any thoughts about that? Anyone?
I'll never know.
Never experienced it.
I'll never know.
For what it's worth, on the Ashcraft front, up until about a week and a half ago, every sign pointed to the Reds needing starting pitching. And then they just decided to be really good.
Well, it's true. I mean, you know, you look at Green and Overton, and Malley was pretty good today. And I don't know.
I think, you know, they set the record for the longest, most games to start a season without having a guy go six innings. Yeah. And I think since they broke that record, every starting pitcher has gone six plus.
Well, they were just trying to set the record.
We're living in a simulation, and it's a cruel one that made me be a Reds fan.
Yeah, really.
Couldn't have had the Yankees.
So what is Graham Ashcraft's, like, upside? He's 24. I mean, is he, like, legitimate, like, guy, or is he Tanner Roark at an early stage?
Before Nate, let me say, before you jump in, because I want you to say, because you've been on his – but I want to set you up here. I've been saying for a while, and I don't think Nate agrees with me, that I think he's got an upside of being a really good reliever. I'm not sold on him being a starter. Nate thinks he can be a starter, and he's excelled as a starter, certainly at times. So, Nate, I'll let you. This is your guy.
I think his floor is a really good reliever. I think he's got the speed. He's hit triple digits. He had collected a 101 a couple times in the minors this year. His off-speed stuff has crazy movement. Right now, he's got like a 70%+ ground ball rate. He needs to develop a third pitch if he's going to be a starter. What I've been reading is that is very, very questionable, but we've seen with Hunter Green, like, you can do that on the fly in the major leagues. I think what we're not discussing enough is that his true ceiling comes in a chicken wing eat-off with Mike Moustakas, because I think it could be a battle for the ages.
He is the kind of player that would be
in that competition.
Yeah. He is the kind of guy they described as portly a few years ago, isn't he?
Right. Yeah, when he was 10, he wore husky pants.
Not allowed to say porky.
Yeah, he was in the huskies.
He wore the husky pants. Boy, it was a different time back
in
the day.
Large pitcher, big through the hips. Roomy.
Sounds like some women I dated back in the day.
Oh!
Hey-o!
We have reached that point of the pod. Let's go.
Yeah, it might be time to move on.
I'm here now.
Everything goes downhill when Chris shows up.
Did we do the Friedel part? Did we do...
No, I believe
that is a sentence that no one has ever said in the history of the world. No one has ever put those words together in that.
Can we do the Friedel part?
It's just that, seriously, no matter what nine guys they start, no matter who they start, the other eight guys should, any of them should lead off rather than him. No matter who. I mean,
no, it's true.
I've got, I would actually, flashbacks of those like early 2000s Reds that were just obsessed with speed.
Oh my
God. Yeah. And I don't, have an objection to TJ Friedl necessarily.
Oh.
But I'm, seriously, I would forego the DH and let the pitcher lead off before I would let TJ Friedl lead off. I mean, it's bless, you know, he's got good hair. I mean, I'm hey, jealous, hey. But come on. He's TJ
Friedl. Not succeeding, is he?
Yeah. Yeah.
He kicked one around today, too, in the outfield.
It happens.
Baseball's hard. That bump, though.
He's, you know, he's not, the truth is he's not a major leaguer.
Yeah.
He might be a fifth outfielder, but he's not.
You ever think like what, like Norris Hopper, would he be like the number three hitter on this team?
Some days.
It's like the whole team's made of Norris Hoppers.
Well, that was how I felt about the whole, you know, no hit loss. I mean, did you, the lineup that the Reds trotted out that day, how did they expect to win?
Awful. Yeah. They wouldn't have scored in a week.
I actually thought one day about, I was watching TJ Friedl. I was like, man, Mike Frank just picked the wrong time to come around, come along.
Pat Watkins would have been an all-star.
Pat Watkins, yes. I mean, he's that type of guy that came up in September and, you know, whatever, you had to watch him. But he's TJ Friedl. I mean, he's got a cool sounding, his draft story was interesting, if you all remember.
Where would
that.
You put between Corey Patterson, Willie Tavares, and TJ Friedl? Where would you rank Friedl?
Number three.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, well, really.
How'd you like to have that for a starting outfield?
Oh, man. Remember that time the Cincinnati Inquirer reported on rumors that Corey Patterson was dating Dusty Baker's daughter?
Yeah.
The Inquirer actually reported on this.
That's why he was playing.
How did I
oh,
miss
what a time that,
that
was.
It made more sense, than the fact that he had him out there because he was talented.
Yeah, really. Oh, boy. We've really, you know, we've gone off the edge.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is the problem when you get four of us together.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Yeah, this is the first time I guess all four of us have been together. And I'm a little bit disconcerted because Chris and I are on the bottom. And, you know, usually – at least I'm up at the top.
I don't know how to switch you back up there, or I would.
Well, I'm not going to tell you. I like being down here.
All right,
what else we got, Nate?
With no headphones in, so don't ask me how to do things. That's pretty much it for Reds news, unless you guys have any other hot takes you need to get out. Because if you do, please, like, I'm very interested.
I got something that isn't Reds related.
Oh, good. I'm sure people be interested in this.
Now, if you looked at what Mike Trout is doing,
yeah, fair.
Is that?
I mean,
I haven't recently, but he's good.
Well, he's got a wins above replacement at 2.7 already.
No, I mean, listen. All jokes aside, I'm willing to go on. To state my claim, I really do think Mike Trout's the greatest player that ever played baseball. Now, I'm the same guy that said Joey Votto was the greatest Red ever and got attacked for it for good reasons. But, no, I think he's the best player. By the time it's over, he's the best player that ever played.
And that team might actually be good now.
Which is fun to watch.
Yeah, we got to start watching that team. I finally bit the bullet this week for my wife and son's sake and subscribed to MLB TV. I had I vowed not to do it, and then my son subscribed to a free trial and, of course, forgot to unsubscribe. But so they can watch their stupid Cubs. But I think I'm going to watch Trout and the Padres.
You know why the Angels are good, though, right?
That's right.
Mackie Biceps. Michael Lorenzen, baby.
Dude has looked really good.
I've never been less on a bandwagon than on that one.
Come on. That guy works out a lot.
He did a lot of exercise.
He's strong. He exercises really well.
A lot of push-ups.
I don't want to be good at exercising.
Curls for the girls.
We got some viewer mail questions, right, Nate. Are we ready for that?
Well, we do. We also have a new member of our Beer League softball team. The Beer League softball team is made up by our friends at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. You join and you can also waste your money on the likes of us, but we appreciate it.
We don't get any of it.
That's true. The newest member of the team is John.
Checks in the mail, Alamo. I promise.
The money goes to buy Chad new ties.
Checks. Checks in the mail.
I apologize in advance for any mispronunciations, but welcome, John Allman. Could be Allman. I'm not sure. Either way, I got him as a power hitting left fielder. Does anybody feel strongly one way or another?
I got a question. Didn't we talk about him last week?
I don't know. Did we?
Is John double dipping?
It's not John's fault. I don't remember. As these guys know, I've been rushing to get here for the show. I'm not prepared at all. But
I got on the Patreon website. It said one new member.
I went think with him. John Auerman is the comptroller of our beer league softball team,
and drives the bus.
That's it.
And drives the bus.
And the bus driver. Yes.
John, no, I think you did get nominated.
I got a question. Chad said that he's not prepared tonight. Which makes you believe that he acts like he's prepared some other weeks.
You all have to admit, Bill and Chris will admit that we are more prepared these days than in the olden days. Where there was literally no preparation.
There's actually kind of an agenda these days.
Yeah. Back in the day, it was just, we'll get on, we'll talk for a little while and have some laughs. So, yeah, John, thank you. You're the comptroller now, as well as whatever we said last week.
Not so many positions. Just team captain, bro. Like, welcome to the team. We need you. All right. So now, viewer mail questions. These are actual viewer mail questions. Like I said, friends at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. Come join the crew. Hang out. We have a good time. We have a Slack channel where we talk Reds baseball. We have one where we talk basketball. We have one where we talk random nonsense. Mostly, you get to hear about the weather in Canada from Joey Gaditza. It's a fantastic time. The first question this week is from Clay Christian, who I am quite familiar with. He said, has anyone else noticed a lot of catchers, especially younger ones, have been receiving pitches from a knee this year, even with runners on? Is this a new thing they are teaching? Is it supposed to save their knees? It makes it really hard to block a ball from that position. I think Tyler Stevenson does this. Have you guys been noticing it, picking up steam?
It's a thing. Yeah, it's a thing. My kid's a catcher, so I kind of pay attention to this stuff. And there's a lot of this one knee catching. The idea is you can get lower and steal those strikes from the bottom of the zone. And these guys are really, really good at still being able to block balls out of that one knee stance. So I saw a picture of Henry Aaron from 1973. From like the Hall of Fame game on Twitter a couple of days ago. And I think like Ted Simmons might have been the catcher as Henry Aaron was batting. And the dude had the most like old school, like high secondary, flat-footed, like all 12 spikes were in the ground and like didn't even have his feet bent. And I was like, that is an absolutely insane stance. But yeah, these guys
got it. And I was like, that is the bizarre.
Did you see it?
I saw you comment on it. I was like, yeah, that is – go to Chris's Twitter feed. It was weird looking.
Weird. It's like the guy's in the middle of, like, squatting 275 or something. Right. But, yeah, that's
Michael Lorenzen, basically.
The one knee thing is a real legit deal, and the guys who are good at it are really, really good at it. They can even kick off that – sometimes they call it a kickstand, and they'll kick off that low foot. And be able to block balls just as well as without and throw. I mean, nobody runs anymore, right?
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Some things that are valuable in the past for catchers are not valuable anymore. I guess the only thing I would say, Nate, is that I've seen Clay play quite a bit of baseball, Clay Christian, who asked this question. And I'm not sure why we're listening to him about catching. I mean, he was a good player, but I don't remember him being a great catcher.
I was going to say, as a catcher – I know how Clay's knees are now. You think he would be more amenable to this technique.
That's right. There you go.
I feel like the situational thing, too. When you get a runner on third, I would probably you know, revert back to the way that you spent your entire life learning how to catch to block that ball. But, you know, if it's going to extend these guys, you know, not just playing years, but the quality of life well after they're done playing, yeah, take a knee.
I was very pleased to learn that at the Reds Fantasy Camp, there are specific rules that basically do not require catchers to block balls or try to throw anybody out.
Or even squat.
Yeah, or even squat. They'd be very happy to hear that.
They let the ball hit the backstop and then go pick it up. You know, the old basketball thing.
As a someday future camper, I'm very happy with that idea.
I hope the new Meta Oculus VR headset has a Reds Fantasy Camp where they win baseball games.
Yeah, really. Quickly about catchers. I was at a high school baseball game last week. One of my son's high school baseball games last week. And I was actually sitting next to a big Reds fan. He's a football coach at the local college out here. And I wasn't really paying much attention because who wants to watch a high school baseball game? But the catcher for the other team, the guy next to me, a buddy of mine, he leans over and hits me and says, "Hey, look, is that Tony Pena out there?" And do you remember Tony Pena back in the day? He'd stick that leg out there. And the high school catcher was doing that. And I don't know. It gave me some good memories from the 80s and 90s baseball. But there was a high school kid in Virginia doing that now. I'm not sure why I mentioned that.
Big news.
If you're listening, Coach Dameron, thank you for that comment.
You heard it here first.
There you go.
Our next question comes from Joey Gaditza. "Hey, guys, if Castillo and or Molly or both get traded at some point this season, it would seem that Hunter becomes the anchor in the rotation. I'm sure he's up for the challenge, but is that a lot to ask of a young guy finding his way in the bigs? I worry a bit about that because of the front office's reluctancy to spend money or trade for a bona fide starting pitcher or two. I hope they put Hunter in the best position."
There's a question in there somewhere. Can I jump in first here? Please. What I would say is, if he's the ace or not, I don't think that has anything to do with his development as a pitcher. You know, I hope it's not the case because he doesn't need to be the quote unquote number one starter for this team yet. He's not ready for that necessarily. Although maybe, but. And the Reds aren't going to be good if he's your best pitcher because he's still a 22-year-old. But this is the Reds. Yeah, whatever. You know.
Have you guys forgotten Mike Minor will be back soon?
I had forgotten.
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
So, you know, if you worry about veteran presences and experienced number one pitchers, don't worry.
I like what Bill said. We already have an ace. Connor Overton,
yeah.
Or whatever.
I mean, you don't get a more low-pressure environment to pitch in than the Reds baseball in May.
Do you guys think one or both of Molly or Castillo will be gone by the trade deadline?
At least one.
I think one of them will be. I don't think they both will be.
I think that's probably
made me sad.
Fair.
Who's it going to be though? Let's take a vote. We got four of us here. Let's see. I say that Castillo's gone.
Yeah, same.
He's got the most value.
Yeah, I agree. Castillo's the one more attractive. He'll be gone.
Yep.
He is attractive.
All right. Now that we've litigated that, our
not as attractive as Johnny Cueto.
Six shutouts the other day for the White Sox.
Looks fantastic. Not that we couldn't use him this year. Our next question comes from Kyle Kapler. "Which of the current relievers do you consider legit building blocks going forward? Small sample size, but I feel like Diaz is leading the pack." I would have felt strongly that was true. And I still do feel pretty good about Alexis Diaz.
I thought we were talking about Jumbo Diaz. I'm sorry.
That's his dad.
Videos of Jumbo Diaz a week or so ago.
I did. Sorry to hijack that one, but yeah, there was a great Hunter or Jumbo Diaz video.
Inflation is not only affecting the American economy.
Look it up. Oh my goodness. You think he was Jumbo before? Yikes.
It's ridiculous.
He's extra Jumbo now.
Yeah, Diaz stuff is just filthy. He has incredible stuff. Still needs to learn how to pitch a little bit. He got some jitters, it seems like, both of the last two games. the game against the first game against Cleveland was just weird. Striking out the first two guys, then wild pitch, a couple walks, getting weird, and then striking out Jose Ramirez, one of the best hitters in the game, making him look silly. Yeah, I'm a huge Diaz fan. As far as the other relievers go, I mean, I like Sessa, but he's a sixth, seventh inning kind of guy. I don't know. Graham Ashcraft might be there later. We'll see what Gutierrez says. What do you guys think?
I like Diaz a lot, too. Hopefully he'll learn to hit the strike zone a little more than he has now. But, you know, that's part of the learning curve. You know, he's a young guy. He's learning how to pitch. It, like we talk about all the time. We did talk – again, this is another David Bell thing the other night. When he was struggling in that game, first game against Cleveland, nobody up. You know, he's out there walking two guys in a row and nobody up. And when you got, you know, 200 guys in the bullpen, must have had a – you know what? I bet they had a good pinochle game going out there and they didn't want to break up the pinochle game.
None of those guys mean anything to me.
That's kind of what I was going to say next. Like, do you want any relievers to be a building block?
Yes. There's one.
Ross Detweiler?
Have we forgotten Ross Detweiler already? Chris stepped all over my joke.
Yes, we have.
Sorry. Indeed. I mean, those guys, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah. No, I think Alexis Diaz shows some markers of being a guy that can be around for a little while, but – I don't love any of these guys, and if none of them are on this team next year or the year after, it's not going to hurt my feelings.
Yeah, yeah. Relievers come and go.
Buck farmers come and buck farmers go.
I think Plato first said that, actually.
I thought it was Churchill.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Whatever.
The Plato.
What's our next question, Nate?
Is it Plato or Pluto?
Is from our buddy Hooper Pal.
Hooper!
Is there an IL for the Beer League softball team? I seem to have broken my football. I think I was designated a middle relief pitcher. Please don't DFA me.
I don't know what you did to your football, Hooper, but
I hope it heals soon.
You can still be on the team.
What's sad is Chris and I have both met Hooper. He's from Columbus.
Good dude.
And yes, he broke his football, but it kind of makes me feel bad that evidently we designate him as a middle reliever when he joined the team. That's what we thought about Hooper. Dare we?
I don't know.
A fantastic name too. And you just put him in middle relief. Like Hooper that's a name you can work with.
It is.
I mean, Hooper, start spot on the Beer League basketball team.
Hooper, I hope your foot and your football are all feeling better.
And you will not get DFA'd as long as you continue,
buying the beer. Money.
As long as right. David Bell is the manager of this team, you will still be here.
Yeah, because you don't need to warm up.
I know we have to get out here. We've gone long. But, Chris, that poster behind you, is it what I think it is?
I was wondering what that was.
Over your left shoulder?
The Bad News Bears?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
I never really noticed that. That's fantastic.
It's an original 1976 movie theater poster.
That's outstanding. I'm sorry. I spend these shows just staring at Chris. And so sometimes I notice
longingly.
Things,
longingly. See my Johnny Bench autograph over here?
Ooh. Second best red ever, somebody said this week at Cincinnati Magazine.
You think they thought Jason LaRue was better?
Ryan LaVarnway, Alex Trevino, Dan Bilardello.
LaVarnway still got that RBI record, doesn't he?
He does. Yes, he does. Nate, do we have any other questions? Are we done here?
That's it. Unless you guys have anything else to add, I am done.
I'm out.
Bill, any final thoughts?
I'm done, man.
Past Bill's bedtime.
Years, man.
That's my bad.
So true.
Chris, any final thoughts?
Negative. Go Cincinnati.
There we go. I have one quick final thought before we get out of here. There's another show about the Reds that we've actually recommended on this show a couple times. It's called, I hesitate to even say it now, it's called Late Night Reds. I was informed, I didn't get to hear their most recent episode yet. And I don't think I will now, because I was told that kind of early in that episode, they were hating on the riverfront and basically saying that they hated us, or at least one, Tim Daniel was the name of the host that said he hated us, I think. And just really was awful. I haven't heard it yet, but this is what Nate reported to me. He was really, really just disrespectful. And so I've got to tell you, we used to recommend Late Night Res. Now I would say I need all of you to go to Tim Daniel and to on Twitter, look him up on Twitter, and then go to their YouTube page, Late Night Reds Talk, and just make sure that you go out there and tell them that the Riverfront is the superior product and that those guys are dead to us. I hope that I didn't get misinformed about what they actually said, but that's what I need all of you all to do.
Reds podcast beef.
Oh, it's great. It's going to be fun. So go and tell them what we really think. Yeah, exactly.
While you're telling this, is hit like and subscribe and all that good stuff too.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the Riverfront. We're a show we've been talking about the Reds since 2007 in some form or format. We are video now, but we're also audio. You can find us at all your wherever you get your audio podcasts. We're there. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, you're going to find us. Just search for the Riverfront. We're also on YouTube. YouTube.com/RiverfrontCincy. Go there and check out the site. Give us a like and smash that subscribe button. You got to smash the button, that subscribe button. Yes. There we go. Hash Brown, sell the team, Bob. If you're not watching on YouTube, you didn't see that just now. You're hearing us talk about it. Also, we're at Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, everywhere at Riverfront Cincy. Listen, gang, this was a lot of fun. For Nate Dotson, for Bill Lack, for Pete Mackinnon, and Chris Garber. This is Chad Dotson saying, so long, everyone.